Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into the Hash Rate Podcast. Broski here. Just wanted to take a moment to thank you all again for your continued support. Season 2 is here. What follows is the first episode of Season 2. Great conversation that we had with Romac of the Pluton Group. Pluton Group is building an enormous solar crypto mining facility in the Mojave Desert. It will be the largest facility of its kind in the United States. And we have a great conversation with Romac just discussing the logistics of it all, how they came to get this thing in motion, and really what he sees for the future of Bitcoin mining and specifically renewable energy as it goes to support Bitcoin mining. So thank you again for tuning into the show. We hope you enjoy that episode. I did want to take a moment just to talk about a new media partnership that the podcast has established with Baltic Honey Badger Conference. And the Baltic Honey Badger Conference, for those of you who don't know, is a Bitcoin conference that will be held in Riga, Latvia, September 14th and 15th. The speaker list is phenomenal. It includes people like Jimmy Song, Rodolfo Novak, Murad Makhmudov, many, many, many more leaders in the Bitcoin community will also be there. This is a Bitcoin conference, so you're not going to hear any shitcoin shills. You're not going to have to deal with any of the bullshit. This will be a very straightforward event focused on education and adoption, and we are fired up to be there. We are excited to be a partner of Baltic Honey Badger as we roll into that conference. And yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. We would love to see you guys there. If you're going to be in Riga, please let us know. We'd love to, you know, grab a coffee or a beer, catch up, thank you in person for listening to the show and taking the conference together. It's going to be a lot of fun. The panels there, I think the panels, aside from this podcast, are going to be the best conversations in crypto that you'll hear over the next, you know, 6 to 9 months. So really fired up for that. Anyways, guys, wanted to get back to the show. Thanks for indulging me on my little rant there about Baltic Honey Badger. If you check the show's notes, we do have a link to where you can do more research on the conference, buy a ticket. Tickets can be purchased in Bitcoin or in fiat. And we hope to see you out there. All right, guys, enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Hash Rate Podcast, your go-to weekly show about cryptocurrency mining and new tech. Thanks for tuning in. Here are your hosts, Crypto Chris Walken, Whale Bear Man, and the Bitcoin Broski.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Hash Rate Podcast. I'm the Bitcoin Broski here today with Crypto Chris Walken and Mean Hash. We are joined today by special guest Romac Sadai of the Pluton Group. We're excited to have Romac on the show. And you know what would be great, Romac, is for the people who may not know who you are, can you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Romac. Middle name John, last name Sadai, if anybody wants to look up. I was born in Iran. Spent my teen years. Moved to the U.S. once in '79, and then moved back out. Grew up in France. Spent my teen years in Paris, which was wonderful. And moved to the U.S. Lived in New York, San Fran, L.A., Houston, San Diego. And my background in the late 80s, professionally, I moved from LA to Houston to build about 1800 unit portfolio of apartments. It was a family business. About 4 years into it, in the early 90s, I started a tenant screening service, which was unheard of. People still have a hard time sometimes understanding what that is. But when you go apply for an apartment, due to regulation in the US, you can't just say yay or nay, flip a coin because it doesn't look, legit from the equal housing. I foresaw a need for criminal, having seen what has already been taking place around the world, a need for criminal record searches as part of tenant screening. And started building a network of criminal databases in 96, 97, and got into mining as a consultant to do an ICO for a company on the West Coast about 3.5 years ago, I want to say, in 2016, early 2017. And I got into, mining, bought miners in ASIC miners, Bitcoin strictly. That's where my interest has been. In mid-2017, ended up flipping them because the prices were so high. Got into actually operating miners, and I have firsthand experienced the problems with some of the biggest names, including Gigawatt, and subsequent to that in 2018, dealing with operators of data centers for miners, which has been nothing but a disaster, legal suit cases after another. So that's essentially my background.
So, Romek, I wanted to jump in first and foremost. You being Iranian, there has been a lot in news lately about Iran and Bitcoin, and specifically Bitcoin mining in the mosques. And I'm not sure, you know, what's factual and what's not. The story that I've heard is that there's free electricity there. Do you have any insight in info as to, you know, the situations around mining in Iran right now?
I don't have any firsthand knowledge. However, I was one of the speakers at the Digital Crypto Mining Summit that Bitmain had put together in Tbilisi, Georgia. There was a delegation from the Iranian government there present. I spoke with them very briefly due to I foresaw restrictions that were coming up. Sanctions were going to be put up back in place, I felt like. And there was a press, I guess, team. I don't know if they're called Iran Coin, I believe. They actually interviewed me. From what I've been told, this was factories that couldn't make enough money. Now, the electricity, let me go backwards, Iranian background. The energy utility providers are all government agencies. Heavily subsidized. The price of electricity has, I believe, either quadrupled or so over the last few years as they have taken the subsidies away. I don't know if mosques get free electricity. I wouldn't be surprised, but I know for a fact from what they told me, factories that produce variety of things and they receive commercial heavily discounted electricity were mining at night to subsidize the inflationary, I guess, pricing and to make up for the gap they had to keep operating. And I know a few private sectors who were mining there as just part of their operation, who operated some data centers. But that was as of, I think, 3 years ago. I don't know if they're still doing that or not.
Interesting. Yeah, it's been heavy in the news here regarding, you know, Iran and Russia both hopping on the Bitcoin train. And, you know, who knows what to believe when it comes to what the media puts out nowadays. But it's good to hear some kind of insight. Let me just add
to that. I actually, on a personal note, lived in Iran in 2007 for about 10-11 months. I've seen what they do, some of the situations. The liquidity problem is the biggest issue with the Iranian government. They don't have access to the financial institutions. The dollar has quadrupled over the last year. So they are mining, but their biggest issue is converting that into fiat. That's where they have the biggest problem. However, having Bitcoin as income, as extra income for the factory, takes away, it hedges them against the inflation, which is their biggest problem.
And I mean, it allows them to participate in trade elsewhere in the world. It's, you know, Russia and the sanctions that are being passed on by the U.S., trade is done in USD around the world. And this is, you know, one of the freeing mechanisms of Bitcoin. So it's exciting to see all countries start to take more interest, but it's really exciting in places where it has a use case that is really beneficial. And it's not just about how high the price is going to go and how much Bitcoin is going to be worth. So, you know, moving on from that, though, I wanted to get a little more insight as to your background prior to Pluton Group. So you're in Houston, and it sounds like you were, you know, focused mostly on real estate ventures, the rental screenings. What was the transition like going from that into Bitcoin?
So I was real estate, but the tenant screening aspect was extremely technical. you're looking at a 300 million record criminal database. We also had access to license plate and driver's license information. We actually wrote an app for the App Store, Apple, within 30 days that they opened, where you could punch in. This was for Texas and the surrounding states. You could punch in a license plate. You could get the information of the car owner, et cetera, all legal, federally approved. Apple didn't approve it for privacy issues. So I had a deep understanding of technology, which was actually deceiving. And the reason I emphasize to say, I understand data centers. I personally would go to our data centers that we operated, Cyrus One in Houston, you know, those things. I understand programming. I understand database network. And then I started reading about Bitcoin, distributed ledger, blockchain. Literally speaking, I was lost. Me and one of our co-founders, Sammy, we were reading when we started consulting about this, and 6 months into heavily reading these things, I'm not the sharpest tool in the box, but I'm not a stupid person. I literally speaking, after 6 months of reading about this day and night and just digging into it, I felt like I understood maybe the basics, maybe 40-50% of it. The other half, all these, very, very technical uses that people were implementing was still going way over my head. But I understood. I mean, blockchain was perfect for some of the things. I mean, driver's license information, license plate information, all those uses. But the transition was extremely, extremely hard initially. I felt the same when I was going digging into internet and technology in late 80s and early 90s. And I was late. And I was late again for blockchain. It had been going on for 7-8 years. So it was very hard. It was very time consuming. And it took a lot of brain power to even understand 50% of it.
Well, I don't think you can call yourself late, right? You guys are getting ready to open basically the largest facility of its kind in the United States for Bitcoin mining. So hats off to you there. You were early enough, I think.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about your mining experience. You said you had some issues with Gigawatt, and I believe there was another facility in, was it Atlanta, that you had some issues with?
Correct. So I bought, like everybody else, a couple of hundred miners from Gigawatt when they arrived in November. They weren't even close to operating them. I decided to take ownership, possession of those that we paid for, and to moved on. Fast forward to try to operate ourselves. And if people think there is prejudice against miners and cryptocurrency today, back, just to give you an idea, in late 2017, if you tried to sell more than $25,000 worth of miners, mining equipment, ASIC miners, even more so, on eBay, they would freeze your account, lock your account down. And if you couldn't justify having attempted to sell those, they would ban your account for selling cryptocurrency. Then PayPal would freeze your money, I guess, infinitely, till you could prove where those miners came from, they owned by you, you had possession of them, and then they would release your funds. So it was an interesting, this is how bad it was. Fast forward to early 2018, we signed a contract with a company in Atlanta to operate a couple of hundred miners, ASICs, nothing huge in the world of mining. It was nothing but disaster. By July, we had filed, a restraining order against the owner of the data center. And on 4th of July weekend of 2017, and I remember because of 4th of July, we locked him out of his facility to force him to make a radical decision to treat us and everybody else in the data center properly. Overheating, I mean, promises, nothing was working. Between early 2018 and, July of 2017, I mean, 18, sorry, I started looking into structuring and finding out what the problem is. And that's essentially what I did with criminal database. You look at it, we started in Texas, 250 counties all had different criminal databases. It was really hard. You had to go find a solution for it. The same thing here. So I came across the piece of land in Western Mojave, and I started looking into solar. And you look at solar, the issues, and that's where the problem essentially was for all these miners, all the issues they had, everything, was that peak hour electricity. And after that, while we're going through that, I decided to start, building something, or at least planning for something that's more long-term versus getting cheap electricity, try to mine for a few years. And, by then you've recouped your money and then some, and, God knows whatever happens after that. So I actually brought the 50 acres of land in Western Mojave under contract into escrow personally in, I think it was April of 2018. And it has been a parallel process trying to develop and put things together in that aspect.
So just to back up there, because it seems like everyone has or has had a very similar experience when it comes to co-locations or anywhere that they've purchased Hashrate, there's been some kind of mismanagement or there was a lack of follow through on the promises that were initially made. What do you feel is that it factor that causes these operations to fail? Do you think it is just mismanagement? Is it maybe a lack of understanding of what they're getting into or biting off more than they can chew? In your experiences, what are you seeing from Gigawatt and the facility in Georgia that, I mean, where did they drop the ball?
It is a zero-sum game, and you have conflicting interests playing, trying to eat from the same pie. You have the owner of the data center trying to make money and take a profit as much as they want to. You have the customer who's trying to colo, who's trying to operate a piece of equipment that from time to time does break down, needs rebooting, and needs some basic maintenance, but most importantly, sucks up so much power. I mean, a two-bedroom condo in Southern California with AC running in summer, you're looking at, part-time AC, about 450, 500, watts. These miners back then, S9s, were sucking up about 1,500 watts, give and take, 14. So you have conflicting interests all over the place. From the utility company, the peak hour electricity can be problematic over time because there's so much they have. You have the community growth, what they provision for. On the other hand, you have the data center operator who's trying to make money. And then you have the mining operators, the equipment owners, who are trying to as well make as much money as possible. So it's at some point, these will come to a head-on collision, especially when you go through a downturn like you have, a long Sure. winter, if you will, for the past year. And my general belief is that you're going to continue with Bitcoin to hit higher highs and higher lows over this cycle of the mining equipment improvements. So you have to be prepared for that. And I think last year was the perfect storm that put, that killed the process. I mean, you take Gigawatt, for example, they overstretched themselves. And then the utility company just played their cards right, put Gigawatt out of business, and put a ban on supplying any more miners with electricity. Essentially put a stop to Bitmain's also facility that was initially supposed to be 200-300 megawatt, if I remember correctly, but they only opened 10 to 12 megawatt, and Douglas County has to put a put an end for the time being and more for these miners, essentially.
Yeah, so the biggest thing I wanted to talk about was just basically building your facility in California. So I lived there for probably 21 years, and I know about the pain of energy prices in California. And a lot of miners that message me that, well, I should say people that want to get into mining, they're either like, well, I live in California or Europe. Like, those are the two worst places in the world that have electricity prices. So I know you have your solar, and I know you're that you're in Mojave. So I also don't know if you're using the wind energy that's available there. They have, I know they have the big windmills, but if you kind of want to just talk about like how you were able to build a facility in California with cheap power.
Okay. So let me give you more of a background, because I really appreciate this question. It has been brought to my attention that people, I don't know, without even peeling the first layer of the onion, they're already passing judgment. As an Iranian American, I've experienced prejudice. I think there is just prejudgment on the miners from a small portion of the community. So I really appreciate the chance to explain how it works. Let's take, you live in Southern California, you mentioned, right? I'm in West LA. Southern California Edison, I believe you're familiar with them. They're one of the most expensive.
Right. Yes, I don't live there anymore, but I did, and I went through all the early 2000s, the rolling blackouts, all that stuff, so I definitely know.
Great. So you're familiar with the peak hour production problem every utility at some point is going to have. So let's take Southern California Edison. Let's start from that right there. Their listed pricing for off-peak commercial volume retail price is about 2.5 cents. Just to give people an idea. And they have excess capacity. The utilities don't work where, you know, they can turn on and off a switch. It's not a car engine. You start when you need it to go 200 miles an hour, and then you bring it to a stop and you turn it off. Even an engine, if you drive a 12-cylinder car, they tell you after about an hour of driving, you don't want to shut it off just sudden cold. You let it run for about 20 seconds, then you shut it off. So electricity grid, the biggest issue they have is peak hour production. They calculate how much electricity they need over the next 5 to 7 years. They go to the utility commission, either they issue bonds or the capital expenditure they need to, and the people have to vote for that. And then they calculate this is what they need over the next 5 to 7 years. Initially, these utility companies didn't realize how much power these mining facilities could consume. Douglas, Winnetchee County, Douglas County, all those in Washington State have experienced that. So they gave out all the extra capacity, basically, utility they had. Within 2 years, everything was gone. You go to the utility commission and say, hey, we're out of capacity and we have, you know, I don't know, 10,000 new residents moving in. We need $1.5 billion to, create excess capacity. Listen, they look at that very quickly. Are they going to put a $2 billion bond, even a $100 million bond, to vote because they gave the electricity cheap to an operator, a business? Let's face it, guys. We don't bring lots of employment to the community. We're not exactly very friendly out there. And cryptocurrency comes so far with the same stigma internet came. They feel like we're all a bunch of thieves and, you know, drug dealers use cryptocurrency. So there is an image out there we need to correct. All of that put together, they're like, no, we're not going to give these guys. The utility commission has the right to terminate any existing contract they have. And guess what? That's what they're going to do. And that's what they have done. In the case of Gigawatt, it was easier for them to give them a notice, say, hey, you're not using the minimum capacity you said you were going to use. You know, you owe us this money. Goodbye. You're out of business. So they're going to continue to do that. On the other hand, when you talk solar, solar has come very cheap now. It's much, much less expensive than it was before. The irony of these tariffs lately, from what I've heard, for example, UAE, Dubai, they actually have a manufacturing facility they built for their own use, which they have, you know, they have completed. Now they're trying to sell. The tariffs are making the market actually a lot more competitive. Currently, just the solar segment alone, you can buy it installed, and you have about a 90-day, order time to installation, lead time, and they install it for you on a large capacity. For solar is, 10, 20 gigawatt. 10 to 12 megawatt is something they carve out of an existing order. For example, there's a 30 gigawatt solar farm in Australia. We sit next to a 300 megawatt solar farm, literally speaking, within 5 miles of us. So the installation of just a solar panel alone is about 80 cents to a dollar installed per watt. So it's very cost effective. What becomes really expensive when people calculate solar is that if you're going to use 24/7 solar, then you have to produce, let's say you need 10 megawatt. First of all, you have to produce 30 megawatt during the day. Then you need battery storage to store that at night to use at night. That makes the cost of a solar infrastructure into the $7 to $9 per watt. That's just not cost effective. I'm a practical guy. I don't need to do one or the other. It's not a zero-sum game from the way we looked at it from the beginning. I just said, we do what would make sense. So if the solar alone during the peak hours is cost effective enough, we're going to do that. And if we can buy from the grid at night, then that's what we're going to do. That gives us a blended cost of extremely, extremely lower than anybody. But more importantly, it gives us the assurance we can supply these cheap rates for the next 25 years, 20 to 25 years, that the solar panels come with the warranty. Because let's face it, the utility company is not going to go anywhere if we're buying excess capacity from them. It's not like during the day, again, they're producing all this power and they can shut it off at night. At night, when they go to the 30% use range, they still have about double that capacity in excess power they're producing. They can go from 100% to 10%. They can go from 100% to 50% to 60%. And that's the long-term game. We're not all solar. We're not all grid. We're a practical proposition to an equation that people have had a hard time, in a sense, solving. Because in my opinion, people are not thinking long-term enough for this. That's essentially, just look at the project. We've been working at it for a year and a half, putting it together, putting all the structure, putting all the right partners in place before we actually get into planning on breaking ground and starting the build-out process.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really great thing. Basically, what you guys are doing is you're covering peak hours and daytime hours with your own power, and then you're transitioning over to grid power when the power's off. And so you're buying electric companies excess power during that time. Can you talk a little bit about the logistics of that? Did you have to work with the power company? Because I'm assuming... let's say the sun goes down and you use up the rest of the power that you guys have, and you got to switch over to the grid. Did you have to, correlate that or yeah, work with the power companies to be like, hey, at this time of day, every day, we're going to all of a sudden jump on your grid and have a huge power draw? Or
absolutely. Again, we're still in the process of finalizing all those things. We expect to break ground within the next 3 to 4 months. But absolutely. One more thing I would like to add. It is a front-loaded, money-wise, investment-wise, that we're spending the money, is front-loaded. So, let's say the solar power, grid farm costs $10 million. it's an upfront cost, if you will. The other attractive part is that under the accelerated capital expenditure regulation at this point, everything we spend upfront the first year is written off. So against that, whatever profit we make indefinitely, we won't be paying any taxes as a tax incentive. But yes, it is. It costs more. So for example, we're working with Boundary Electric, and one of the structures is that we need to have two parallel set of essentially of infrastructure that can handle both. Also, we sit about 3 miles from the main power line. So running that to the property is also something we have to do. From the utility point of view, utility companies, one of the most important part is that as soon as they see solar, they think you're going to be trying to sell them some electricity. In California, I believe they have to buy it at 9 cents, no matter when it is, how it is, whether they need it or not. So in order to mitigate that, they make you go through some long paperwork process that takes you, literally speaking, 2 to 3 years to get approval to be up and running. Once they hear, no, we're not trying to sell them an electricity, but we actually need the infrastructure, the substation to pull in that kind of data at night, they're literally speaking, they become all ears, and all of a sudden, you send an email to the head manager, all of a sudden an entire team of 12 people is on the matter trying to expedite the process because they're literally speaking sitting on that excess capacity.
So I mean, the fact that you're not going to be back metering any of the power to the grid is I'm sure an attractive proposition to Edison. And you know, as you guys are developing and you know, planning to build all of this out, what's the, if you don't mind me asking, and I don't know if you can share this, but how much power are you guys going to be producing for the facility? I mean, are we talking 10 megawatts? Are you looking to scale up to 100? What's the size of this?
For this, right now, we're looking at 10 to 12 megawatts. It's 50 acres. 49 acres are dedicated to the solar, basically, farm. 1 acre is dedicated to the container and the hangar structure warehouse for hosting of the miners. The exact number is going to come once we actually place the final order based on what's available as far as the solar panels are concerned. So we're looking at based on the prelim calculations, it's going to be somewhere between 10 to 12 megawatt That structure.
That is awesome. So are you getting these from SolarCity? Is Elon Musk getting involved in cryptocurrency? Is that
funny enough, a couple of people have brought that up. And listen, I won't turn that down. No, we have not reached out to him. Somebody actually came to me like, I know his sister. You know, do you mind I talk to them? I said, hey, listen, talk to whoever you like to help out. But no, we actually have a partner from ironically Houston, one of my co-founders, Cole Walton, who's actually a founding investor. He's the one who approached me to last year, telling me I need to go on a much bigger scale. And he's like, listen, I'm willing to put money into this thing and be partners. He's actually a wealth manager, licensed financial advisor, an attorney by... He is a friend in Houston who's our partner now. They have known each other. They have worked with each other before, who has a 1.5 megawatt project. I think he has scaled up to 2.5, if I'm not mistaken, in Sealy, Houston, who's got a great relationship with solar panel producers, manufacturers. So he's our official partner on that aspect. And the reason for me that was interesting, if you can pull off a solar farm in Houston that has probably one of the worst solar ray and number of sunny days in the US, my hat off to you. Then you can easily work on a project that's in Western Mojave, which is the cool part of Mojave, 72 degree average temperature. And we get, literally speaking, with the exception of about 9 to 12 days of non-sunny or rainy days. The rest of the year, we get 90 percentile solar rays. So, and that's basically where we have the structure in place.
Like, just to play devil's advocate, you could certainly have found a cheaper, for lack of a better term, power alternative elsewhere. Why focus on solar? Why go the renewable route the way that you are?
To answer that first question, I don't think so. I don't think we could. We had a meeting with an individual who's been an investor in the manufacturing side, who operates, literally speaking, tens of thousands of miners, who's looking for a facility for 40,000 miners. I don't think we could have. I don't think we could find a place that could reliably say, hey, I can guarantee you a pricing operation for the next even 8 years, let alone 20, 25 years. I don't think we could have, honestly. We had a hard time finding reliable structure for a couple of hundred of them. And anywhere you go, anybody you talk to, they are like, the pricing they can give you or the contracts they sign is short term, 2 to 5 years. For us, that's short term. My background is literally in real estate and technology. It's more of a long term. Also, the tax credit is an important piece. I mean, every penny we spend against that, first of all, we're not paying any taxes on it because it's capital expenditure. Mm-hmm. It's accelerated on the first year. And against that, we won't be paying any income taxes for that net profit we would be making over the years. And on the other hand, we're guaranteeing that we control our destiny for the next 20 to 25 years with Bitcoin payout and income. So in a sense, we're hedging. At the end of the day, let's say something happens, whatever. I don't think it will, but we have real estate backing. We have a data center, at least. We have 50 acres with a solar farm and data center. And then on top of that, once you add in the Bitcoin production, it's almost you're betting long-term on Bitcoin, and then you're hedging it by real estate backing it.
And I think that's one of the biggest issues that during the bear market basically wrecked every new farm that came in, you know, that December, January timeframe, full on FOMO. People were just paying crazy amounts for ASICs. I think a lot of these farms were paying like 12, 14 cents kilowatt hour, which is insane at large scale. So going back to the way that you're cycling your power and all that, like that's a huge thing that all these new farms that are coming up that want to build need to look into. That basically they need to look at the future, right? We go into another bear market, can they survive? Will they have enough Bitcoin or enough funding put off to the side if, you know, Bitcoin drops down to a certain level that they're near break even? Can they survive? And I really think that's a big thing that they need to look into.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I agree 100%. I mean, you look at it, you're getting free electricity during peak hours, and then you're paying, let's say, even if you pay 5 cents at night, let's say you double the prices that Southern California Edison has listed, then you have a blended cost of a penny and a half over the 24-hour cycle, let's say even at 2 cents, that's guaranteed over the next 20 to 25 years. That to us is the value proposition. And that's where our interest lies. My partner, Cole, he's been investing in Bitcoin professionally since 2013. And he foresaw 2 weeks before Mt. Gox went down that there was something happening there. And he took his assets out of that, put it, I believe, into Coinbase. He's a professional wealth manager, trader, lead trader at Kainos Capital. So on that aspect, so this is what I know. I'm not the smartest guy anywhere. I try to work with people who cover the aspects we don't understand in existing group, bring them on. What I don't understand from the beginning, bring them on board. So I agree with you. I mean, the trading, you have to hedge, and then you have to be able to sustain the lows. Yes, the price is going to go higher lows, but the hash rate is going to keep on going through the roof. I think I read something that we've hit the highest hash rate ever on Bitcoin yesterday.
Yes, it keeps going up. And What's Miner's new ASICs are coming out soon too. So we're going to pass 80 easily by the end of the summer.
Correct. So, and that's going to be the name of the game. If the prices go up, you got to be able to sustain a higher low as people jump in. And remember, somebody reached out from Samsung, and I don't know if they're really with Samsung, but that's what at least they told us. They're working already on the next generation of the miners, I believe 3 nanometers. So you're going to continue to do that. And if you don't have almost next to zero cost of electricity, couple of cents guaranteed, I don't think long-term you can sustain. It's going to be the survival of the fittest, or in this case, cheapest electricity.
Yeah, so you talked a little bit about the maintenance that's required for running the Bitcoin mine itself. Can you talk a little bit about what it's been like to start setting up a solar farm and what type of maintenance and support and stuff that you guys have to do with that? Is that something that the solar company that you buy the panels from comes out and does for you guys? Or are you going to have people out there hiking around 50 acres, making sure that all the panels are set up right? Or
yeah, so the panels are going to be smart panels. They're going to rotate toward the sun. There will be some maintenance required for the maintenance of the facility. We do have a subcontractor that's out of Bakersfield, about, I think, an hour drive, 45 minutes drive, who can be at this site within 2 hours if anything goes wrong. The facility itself will be manned 24/7 with extra maintenance crew. We will be operating about 5,000 ASIC miners. We will have on-site maintenance and parts for about 10% of them at any point given time. As far as the solar panels are concerned, so we don't sit in an area where you have, huge events. Like one of the biggest things are storms. We don't get storms. However, we recently have received some earthquakes there. We don't suspect anything over the top. However, we will have earthquake insurance as well. It's a state, basically, pool. It's not anything crazy. But overall, we should not have too much of a issue with maintenance. But absolutely, there will be contractors available and routine maintenance on the farm.
There was the news not too long ago that Bitcoin mining consumes as much energy as Las Vegas. I've seen it also said that it consumes.
Somebody brought to my attention, and I think actually used that in an article, New Zealand. So, I don't know. To be honest with you, it seems a bit high, but regardless, 70%, it's all power they're buying from the utility companies. At some point, all the utility companies are going to face an existential question and decision to make, meaning do they continue to give the electricity out at such a low price to a handful of essentially customers, or do they stop that? And if they don't, they have to spend so much more money into generating. Now, you talk about the hydro in Quebec, Montreal, that area. It's 100% hydropower. I don't know what the maximum capacity they have. They're actually one of the good utility companies who figured out. Initially, there was a lot of backlash, but they figured out what they do. So they have put it out for auction. They have some specific structures that they do in place. But I can guarantee you at some point, they're even going to have to make a decision because there's so much you can produce. There's always a cap. Let me be very clear. We're not an operational facility. We have purchased the land. We have everything in place to move forward with it. We plan to break ground within the next 3 to 4 months. We're that's what we're planning on doing. And the reason I say that, a lot of people out there are putting some screenshots of a video that we made that shows with a narration of its coming, of what looks like a solar farm that comes into fruition into that video, saying that, you know, we're trying to do hosting or things like that, which we're not. But we need to start as an industry to start thinking more long term, not so much short. And we need to start producing our own electricity. It's great. We are 70% renewable. All those utility companies at some point are going to have to make a decision. This is going to change somewhat. But it's great, essentially. And remember, with the next generation of coming, these miners coming out, Samsung is announcing miners as well within the next couple of weeks. So you're going to have a lot more and more electricity consumption. And we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up when you talked about your Samsung guy, that they are working with EnoSilicon, and the What's Miners that are coming out are Samsung chips. So, yeah. And they're working on newer 7-nanometer, but yes, there already is talks of 5. So, Patrick's going to keep growing.
And I don't know how this guy actually was saying, and that's why I say I don't know how real this guy was. He was saying they're working on a 3-nanometer. To me, that's a little too quick.
From what I've seen, the new NVIDIA graphics cards are going to use Samsung chips, and they're basically buying all of the remaining Samsung supply of their 7-nanometer chips. It would not surprise me if they already have beta versions or somewhat working versions of 5-nanometer chips, and that 3-nanometer chips is what they're working on in R&D right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, well, we see, and I think they have some sort, they're hoping to have about 300,000 miners out there mining with their chipset. I don't see how they're going to be able to infrastructure that unless Samsung is willing to step in as the 800-pound gorilla to force the issue. We've seen I was at the Tbilisi event. I said, I don't think you can operate data centers that are not friendly. So you have to keep the three, I guess, from the ESG has to cover. You have to be environmentally friendly. You have to be socially conscious, and you have to work with the government. If you cover your ESG, then your project, no matter what you're doing, your project is going to be successful, in my opinion, especially in the US. Bitmain trying to buy 3 data centers and reboot a coal factory producing electricity at a cost of $500 million, that doesn't cover any of these aspects. And if anybody is trying to host 300,000 miners in the US or anywhere else that has long-term stability, they're going to have to step in and pick up the tab for that electricity production if they are going to be a long-term player.
Yeah, I could even see this kind of turn into the like the old CPU war back in the early 2000s between Intel and AMD, when they were fighting for the X64 platform. So with these ASIC manufacturers being, you know, I have 7, I have 5, I have 3, like I could see this actually hurting some farms too, because a lot of the guys want to be bleeding edge and they're like, oh, well, there's already a better ASIC and this one just got delivered. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this all plays out.
Chris, it's starting to sound, I'm glad I'm not the only old guy at the conversation here. I'm 52, I'm usually a dinosaur. Anywhere I go in these events, I'm like, I talk about, you know, the internet, you know, coming, and I was late in the, you know, late 80s and early 90s. You're starting to talk really old.
Well, I am close to my mid 30s now. I just had a birthday today, so
we're
all getting there. Speaking of this, I found out yesterday. So I normally buy everything online. I went into Best Buy the other day. They stopped selling CDs. I don't know when this happened, but it happened. So,
but the real question is, why were you looking to buy a CD?
No, I wasn't. So what could you possibly I actually went into Best Buy to go laugh at how overpriced their GPUs are. And I was walking through the store, and then I realized I was like, wait, where is the CD section? And I realized it was gone.
That's funny. Yeah, I think they stopped for a while. Oh, Chris, I guess you haven't been to Best Buy in a long time.
No, I buy everything online, so.
Yeah. And here I was, I thought, yeah, you know, Chris was closer. Here I am beating him by 20 years.
So we're pumped for what you guys are doing. I got to say, this is the minute that the press release came out, or we started to see information circulating about what you're working on, we wanted to get you on to talk about this in more detail. And we definitely want to have you on again as you guys get closer to launch, because this is fascinating. You know, if this is the way that mining is moving, we want to make sure that, you know, people such as yourself have a platform to continue to talk about it, because everyone can benefit from this. You know, one question that I do have before we kind of wrap things up here is what Pluton Mining is doing and how you guys are building this facility and the plans you have for the future. Do you feel like something like this can be duplicated? Is this a product or a project that could be done elsewhere in the United States?
So that's a tricky question. Geography plays a lot into this thing. The solar ray, you need to be sitting at a high percentile solar ray area. You want to be sitting in a cool area. We're the best location for solar ray. The only other two locations better than this are central Iran, where there's a salt desert that gets better solar rays. Remember, we're already in the 90 percentile in this area. And then Saudi Arabia. Unfortunately, in those areas, you hit 150, 200 degrees. I think the top they have recorded, like 160 degrees. Literally speaking, it melts everything. So hot. So geography plays a lot into the calculation that we had, because it mitigates the cost, meaning you can produce more electricity from the solar panel over a longer period during the day. We get almost 12 hours of sun, about 10 hours of producing electricity sun for about, you know, 5 months out of the year, 6 months out of the year. So we get quite a bit of sun. We don't get, so those things play. I'm hoping we can show that. I'm hoping we do it. Obviously, we have put our money where our mouth is so far. I got into it. I took the land under escrow thinking it makes sense. So far, all the partners we have selected have vetted the project, and they have agreed to be a partners after they did the vetting. Unfortunately, we're in a field, in a space where people are very, very suspicious. And I totally understand that we haven't. But some publications are not even willing to mention us because we haven't actually, you know, broken ground, or we're not operational, as interesting as it may be. You know, when you're talking to me, this is not you validating we're successful, we have done it. We're extremely upfront about it, but at least we're getting talk. You give us the time, which we appreciate, to explain what it is we're doing. And people can go decide for themselves the future data center, mining center operators can go decide what to do. We can replicate this, by the way, in that area at about four times bigger. And that's essentially our play, is that once we're successful with this phase, then we can replicate this very quickly with the same infrastructure. I'm hoping other people can do it. Australia is also another great area. You could potentially do something like this. So hopefully we show it works. On planning, I think everything has been covered, what we're doing. We're going to be making some additional announcements as to partners, advisors, and launching officially the website of the project within the next 7 to 10 days. And we're looking forward to it. And again, really appreciate the time you guys have given me to talk about the infrastructure and the project.
We really appreciate you making the time to come on the show, Romac. What I would love is if you could just let people know, I know the website's launching in 7 to 10 days, but for now, how can people follow Pluton Group and get updates as to your guys' progression?
So you can go sign up for our mailing list at Pluton Mining. And Pluton is Plouton, the Greek god of finance and money. Initially was spelled with PLU, but for whatever reason, even back then, I guess they had sanctions and banning, and so they changed it to Plouton, Pluton Mining. You can go sign up for our newsletter mailing list to get notified. You can also follow us at Pluton Group, one word, on any social media. You can see we just came back from Taipei. Sammy, my partner, is going to be present at Barcelona BTC, and we're hoping to get people's interest into doing what's the, again, I call it the ESG project, where we're environmentally friendly, socially conscious, and government compliant.
Well, again, Romac, thank you for coming on the show. And to our listeners, we appreciate you continuing to tune in. For now, this is the Hash Rate Podcast signing off. We will talk to you all again very soon.
That's a wrap for this week's Hash Rate Podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do us a huge favor and subscribe to the show and leave us a rating on your preferred podcasting platform. For daily updates and memes, remember to follow us on Twitter at Hash Rate. That's H4SHR8. Thanks for tuning in.